want to attempt to accomplish in the next year, 2 years, or however long we serve on this. So I think we'll jump into it right away. John is here from the DNR, and John is really the agenda. I think he's going to kind of walk us through, Dan. I started to say Dan, and I said, is it Dan or Dave? Oh, Lauren is.
Hey, Lauren. Shoot, we can't run the whole show by ourselves.
I never got a chance to say hello this morning. Good morning. Good afternoon.
How are you doing, Jim?
I'm good.
How you doing? Good to see us. And we have a great big Grand Rapids.
Now we're going to get even bigger Grand Rapids.
I was going to mention that, too. I missed you. I apologize.
But at any rate, Lauren, what we're just kicking it off. You know, this is my first session, and I think this is more of an informational type system session to try to get our head around what we jointly agree is our charge, and then what we hope to accomplish in the next year, 2 years, or however further out we go. And we're going to kick it off right away. John Ingus, he's here. Marty had him come in from the DNR and kind of review the charge and some of the background information, and then we'll take off from there.
Okay, so the agenda here, I guess the review of the charge there, the goal of the committee, the subcommittee is to review the mineral leasing and mineral management programs of the DNR and statutes related to school trust lands and recommend to the PSFAC necessary changes that could be made. So that's what I'm here is to go through the next part of the agenda, minerals management processes and procedures and what we do.
Just start, Marty. You haven't missed anything.
Marty never misses.
No, Marty knows all, sees all, hears all.
Wrote all? Wrote all?
So the first page, I have a handout here that's several pages long. What we do in the mineral management program is promote mineral leasing of school trust minerals. And, of course, it's all state minerals, actually. You're focused on school trust, but we also have county tax forfeit university trust minerals that we also.
What percentage of the trust is school trust of that? Or do you have a percentage of trust, university trust? And
yeah, school trust is in total 2.5 million acres of surface plus minerals.
Okay.
And an additional 1 million acres of severed mineral rights. So there's 3.5 million acres of school trust mineral rights. Okay. And then for the university trust, it's really quite small. There's about 25,000 acres of surface and minerals, and an additional about 25,000 of severed minerals.
But it's in really good spot.
It's in really good spot.
How much severed? How much severed?
25,000.
25,000 of severed. So a total of around, it's just under 50,000 for the university trust. And the tax forfeit is, it changes every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
big.
Big.
Yeah.
And of the 25 that is non-severed, you control the severed too?
Yeah.
Okay.
DNR is responsible for leasing all state-owned mineral rights.
Okay.
My idiocy, severed, non-severed.
Well, if you think of land as having two separate titles, one for the surface and one for the minerals, you can sever the mineral rights and own them separate from the surface.
Okay.
So on the range, it's very common that you buy a house, somebody else owns the minerals underneath your house.
I'm sorry.
Like Hartley's and Congdon's.
Yeah.
Pillsbury's.
There's a map on about page. Of the
school trust. I interrupted.
No, that's all right. John, you said something about it. You manage for the counties as well?
Yeah. County tax forfeit.
Yeah? Just the mineral portion?
The mineral portion.
Okay.
If it's a surface lease,
timber, they handle with their land part.
Or surface sale, then the county administers that. But the minerals are administered by the state. And then the royalty split, though, the state retains 20%. Of the remaining 80%, 5/9 goes to the local school district. No, four. Goes four to the local school, school district, four. 3/9 to the
township,
and 2/9 to the township or city.
Three-ninths county and 2/9.
We've got a situation like that over in Bowabic, where on that the East Bowabic Reserve, the middle is moving into. There's two or three tax forfeited 40s. And the school district's going to wind up with $1.5 million. I think it's about $1.5 million. And the city's going to wind up with around $1 million out of that. And if they'd have kept mining, we'd have probably started to see in revenue out of that in the next couple of years. But now with all the slowdown, I don't know.
With the school funding, though, is that actually less general fund obligation, or is it actually extra money for the school?
Yeah, that it used to be that it was an addition to what went to the school. Yeah. So that changed in the mid-'80s.
Sure.
And that went to an offset to the general fund. So it won't make any difference.
So the school really won't see that much more?
Well, this is on school trust.
Yeah.
And then last legislative session, that was changed back again. So it's supposed to, in the future, be in addition to what the school districts.
No, but get. But I'm. But this isn't school trust fund, man.
This is tax forfeited county.
That's an addition.
That is an addition. My understanding is both of them
the
are
mineral
in
is?
Addition.
The
yeah.
Okay, because so I know the timber is an addition.
Yeah.
So the East Bowabic School
timber is an addition.
Is an addition.
Yeah. See, East Bowabic School District will see about $1.5 million out of that over some period of time.
Yeah.
Bowabic will see about $1 million, and hopefully we can start putting some streets in.
So with that, let me further ask this, and Lauren, you know the answer to this probably. With the ESSER deal, have those mineral rights been sold, and is that what this, those have not been sold?
Not at the surface. Not,
go ahead.
We have leases. There are
2,080 acres.
Yeah, 2,080 acres of leases. Some is university, some is tax forfeit, and there are a couple of 40s that are school trust.
When Hanna Mining Company sold that land to Blandon Company, they sold the surface. Mm-hmm. But there was some mistake in it that Blandon actually ended up with a 40 with minerals in it as well. Yeah. Now, I assume that they gave that up in the lease because they were not interested in being in the minerals at the time. There was at least one 40 that was a mistake someplace along the way.
So you're in the what school district would benefit from that?
That's Nashwauk.
That'd
and
be Nashwauk.
It's primarily Nashwauk, isn't it?
It's primarily Greenway.
Okay.
So there's very little school trust land over.
Oh, there's a lot of school trust land
on the lesser.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, but they aren't going to get into it.
Right.
Until
okay.
Later.
Yeah, because they're going to start into state ore there, aren't they? And then work there towards the Langdon Warren, then towards the GNIOP.
Yes,
but I think the state ore is mainly University Trust where they're going to start out.
Okay.
But the potential there is, and currently is about the known reserve about 15 additional million.
Okay.
When they start doing that.
How you know, not to get too far off the track, but how do you feel about the ESSER project? Is it it's going forward?
We're going to try to go up there. Have you been up there at all?
Not lately.
Okay, I'm going to try our best to go up there next week at some time.
Have they started any kind of construction, or is it mostly earth movement?
I can't answer that. They have an awful lot of earth to move.
Yeah.
They're constructing the rail line.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're doing some foundation work for the plant.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're sorry, John. We interrupted you again.
That's all right. So back to the first page, I just listed some of the things that we do. Promote mineral leasing and school trust minerals through lease sales, negotiated leases. And those are for ferrous minerals, both taconite, iron ore, and lean ore stockpiles. We do work with some aggregate, even though aggregate generally goes with the surface, and so forestry, most of the aggregate leases on school trust would be handled through forestry. We do try to promote aggregate minerals on state school trust lands. Non-ferrous minerals, of course, the copper nickel deposits on the Duluth Cab Road. There are also school trust minerals down in that Aiken County, Carlton County area, where Kennecott is currently drilling, and then up on the Duluth complex. Industrial minerals, there, I believe, are some industrial mineral leases now that Kennecott has taken out in that Carlton County, Aiken County area on school trust land.
And what do you mean by industrial?
Industrial mineral would be, in this case, it's a serpentine olivine mineral that they actually think at some point could be used to sequester carbon dioxide.
Okay.
So it's that's the industrial mineral. But industrial minerals could be kaolin. Oh, yeah, there is kaolin in that one, too. I was going to say industrial minerals can be clay. Mm-hmm. Clays.
And peat involved in that? Or is that surface?
Peat is... Did I miss Pete?
And that's in what area? Pete Kennecott's involved in
the Tamarack area.
Okay. Pete goes with our leasing.
Okay.
And I talk about Pete leasing later on.
Okay.
We talk about Pete leasing, and there are school trust lands where we have Pete leases.
Okay.
Now, if it's county tax forfeit, the county handles those peat leases. Sometimes we'll get an agreement with the county that will do the leasing. But generally the county does, that's a surface. So.
As a general rule of thumb, are the county leases and the state, the leases that the DNR does, identical in value typically?
Yeah, if they're signed at the same time and we do something on county tax forfeit and we do something on school trust, and it's taconite, they'd probably be pretty close to identical.
So, I mean, from the business standpoint of it, it's not preferable for them to deal with the county over the DNR.
Most of the time, if there's peat involved, we do a joint powers agreement, and the county then agrees that DNR will lease in their behalf, and they'll get the income.
They get the
And it just is a lot simpler.
It may be advantages for the mining companies others to mine other than their old leases as opposed to their new leases. But because of when it was signed and how long, what the value was at the time. But I think in your update leases, there's a time limit on those, are there not?
Yeah.
They used to be like 50 years.
They run out, yeah.
But now
sometimes it's 25. Mm-hmm. Quite often depends on what the company is requesting. And then we try to end up with an escalator that will follow the market trends so that the royalty rates escalate according to the market trends. The second point I have there is that we ensure exploration performed according to statutory regulations. And, of course, a lot of exploration is going on right now in the Duluth complex and in the where they're actually drilling holes down.
Here's a copy of this if you want for the public. We got some copies here.
And so we have individuals who go out and check, make sure that the boring is being done according to the way it's supposed to be done. Then there are state regulations that we end up retaining 1/4 of all the drill core. So that if a hole is drilled, quite often they give us all the drill core, and then they'll split the portion that they're interested in, and we end up getting half of it. But the state law requires that we retain at least 1/4 of the drill core in our Hibbing drill core library. That way, if a hole's been drilled, at least we have the drill core that they can go back and look at again. We don't have to re-drill in an area that's been drilled.
Actually, Franconia's Birch Lake platinum deposit, that was actually discovered in the drill core library. It was a hole drilled in the 60s, and they didn't analyze for platinum, and went back and reanalyzed that drill core, and there's an ore-grade intersection of platinum in that hole, and that led to Franconia doing their Birch Lake project, and they will tell you that they pointed to that as what got them into that particular deposit. So it's worth keeping.
And if we do a tour, that'd be good good thing for people to see the drill core like
that. I've been through it. It's impressive.
And then the next item on there, I say we issue permits to mine, of course. We review mine plans, environmental impacts, and closure plans for any mine that will be started in the state. Number five, the accurate accounting of minerals mined on school trust land. We inspect weighing devices. There's belt scales. We get paid royalties on the tonnage that they mine. So it's, right now, I don't know, a few months ago we were getting probably a dollar a ton.
Is it down to a dollar now? Marty was telling me it hit as high as $1.40, so I was way off this point.
When you said 75?
Because back when I retired, just for perspective, when I retired in 2003, I think we were down under 50 cents a ton. And that escalated with what happened in the steel industry since. It's got close to $1.50. Now it's back to a buck.
$1.67 on one that we negotiated.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now
with the escalator.
Yeah. Now it's back down closer to a dollar.
Well, thinking of the average of all the leases on one property.
Yeah. Well, I knew it had gone up, but I didn't know it had gone up by a multiple of four.
Mel Taconite was selling for $148 a ton, which is phenomenal.
No question about it anymore.
But 4 years ago, they were selling for $40 a ton.
In the 2003, if we could have sold it for $25 a ton, we would have jumped with joy.
Yeah.
Wow. There was no market.
We inspect the weighing devices. We verify the mine material, sometimes by calculating void, how much void is left after it's mined. We can look at do calculation based on that. We end up with dispute resolutions with adjacent mineral owners. If you have a 1 foot air in a 40 acre, if you say the line's right here instead of right here, and you're 1 foot off, that can be 15,000 tons of taconite.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that we know whose taconite is whose and who gets royalty for it. So we do some dispute resolution. We ensure that the taconite that was mined is going to, we get the proper royalty. Then we ensure lien ore stockpiles are placed in areas for future use, and that is something that right now is playing out at Hill Annex, where we've had lean ore stockpiles that have been sitting there for many years, and now we have an interest
With the magnetation?
With magnetation, yeah.
So you're kind of the taconite police.
Yes. And then for state-owned mineral. And then we ensure accurate payment to mineral royalty, too. The proper payment comes in.
No, and I have to say, Joe, I lived on the other side of the table from these guys for a long, long time. The DNR does a very good job, and the mines respect the job they do up there. They come in for their annual review and to make sure the work that was done, said to be done on the waste dumps and sloping of the mines and all that was done and set up where we got to go next year. They monitor, and in monitoring the actual volumes of ores mined and where they're placed and all that, they have a very, very good working relationship with the mines, and it's very thorough.
So by statute agreement, maybe even with the leases, you have control over the mines, the operation of in these aspects of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and so you have total access
They have offices. They have an office like at Mintec. They have an
right
office
there.
With a state inspector there, and it's a very good working relationship. Or it always was.
It's really all based on having the agreements in place. And we work to get the agreement in place. And once we have that, it's a very mining companies are very professional people, and we just generally work very well together.
No, it's a very professional. relationship. I mean, it's accurate, it's professional, and it's there's real safeguards within it.
So the next page then just points out the statutes that a couple of them, the goal of the permanent school trust fund, the legislature intends that is the goal of the permanent school fund to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the school trust lands consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities imposed by the trust relationship established in Minnesota Constitution with sound natural resource conservation and management principles and with other specific policy provided in state law. And that sound natural resource conservation and management principles was Marty mentioned this morning in his testimony. And then the next one is a mineral development policy. So it says, it's a policy of the state to provide for diversification of the state's mineral economy through long-term support of mineral exploration, evaluation, environmental research, development, production, and commercialization. Then the next page, I just put down the state as a trustee and the duties of a trust manager. Kind of look through those. The next page is the where I show the types of school trust lands. It's approximately 3.5 million acres of mineral rights. Two and a half million are surface ownership, 1 million are severed minerals. But there's these different types. Swamp lands were lands granted by the federal government. Indemnity lands were lands granted by the federal government as replacements. The school trust was supposed to get section 16 and 36 in each township. Well, by the time Minnesota became a state, a lot of the southern area of the state was already settled, and 16 and 36 were gone, so that's why so much land in the northern part of the state was identified.
So how did that work? Somebody asked me that question the other day. If you got 16 and 36 down in Nobles County, did Nobles County then pay money to the state or something, or you just designated something up north?
Congress just designated something up.
Up north as the one.
So the replacements came up north. And the way it turned out, that was a good deal.
Because
that's where the minerals are.
Otherwise, you'd be in the
farming
business. You'd be doing corn and beans.
Marty would have his piece of straw hanging out.
You'd have his DeKalb hat on.
Oh, me a hayseed, Jim.
So all of these lands were essentially, grants, different types of grants from the federal government. The next page is a map of where the school trust mineral leases are, and I pointed out a couple different areas there. You can see the copper-nickel Duluth complex in the green there, up in the northeast. Then you see the Iron Range, of course, taconite leases in the brown. And then the copper Kennecott leases down there on the Aiken County, Carlton County border.
And what are those minerals?
That's mainly, it's more nickel than copper, is my understanding.
Okay.
So it's mainly pentlandite is the nickel mineral, which is iron nickel sulfate.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it seems like they've run into areas that are much richer in some of their drill core than what is found in the Duluth complex. They found some very high quality drill core with high concentrations of nickel and copper. And then there's scattered peat leases there. Now the next spreadsheet is the income for the last 4 years, fiscal years, for school trust. For taconite, non-ferrous, we're on this one here.
That's the one.
Page right before that.
Very good.
Before
I did
that.
I think we're right here.
And so you can see the totals there for the 4 years. And for the 4 years, it's about $60 million from those various taconite, non-ferrous, peat, miscellaneous, and stockpile leases. And I've got a couple of notes there. There's in miscellaneous and stockpile lease royalty payment. We sold one stockpile up in the Virginia area for about $320,000, so that'll go in the next fiscal year.
What will that one be used for?
That, actually, it was purchased by the city of Virginia because they wanted that land, and there was a value in the stockpile. So we said, if you're going to have the land, you need to purchase the stockpile. So they're going to use it for aggregate or
roads or something.
Roads, whatever it would be used for. There, a little later, we'll talk about some of the hill annex areas too. Then you asked the question of taconite royalty, how much is school trust on the next page, university trust, export, but you can kind of see the breakdown there that it has been for the last 4 years.
When it comes to that, John, and well, you probably do have the answer, but you got the tech royalty listing non-ferrous. Okay, out of the total of this revenue, how does that compare to the grand total? I mean, how much of this, how much of what is mined is privately controlled versus state controlled?
18% is school trust.
Of the whole. Okay, so
18%
is
last year. School trust.
Is that also good for in total forever, or
no,
that's just last year?
That was last year.
Do you know what it is in total?
Boy, I don't know what of the reserve that's up there.
Yeah.
Boy, I had never looked at it.
Okay.
I don't know what it would be.
Okay.
But last year was 18%.
Okay.
And total state was a little less than 25%.
Okay, total, so 7% was other state, I guess.
It might be.
So that would say 75% is private.
Yeah.
Okay. So most.
At least last year. Now, okay. There's areas, it's funny, you know, there's areas.
That could vary a lot.
Where it changes because all of a sudden one of the mines gets into a lot of state ore and less private.
Could you get that for the total without a lot of work?
For the total?
Total reserve. Or is that a lot? Don't do it if it's a lot of work.
I don't know. I'll have to ask one of the mining engineers.
There's some areas where we know.
I'm just wondering what potential is there. Well, I guess I'm just wondering what the potential is.
Reserve numbers for each plant.
If we're getting 18% in the school trust, but in the grand total reserve, if they have 30%, then what do we do to try to maximize the opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean.
But
if you're at 18% and the total is 9%, then there's not much opportunity to maximize.
Probably the biggest school trust reserve in one spot is the area west of Minntac.
The Ontario.
The Ontario.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that Ontario could become
trust.
Very active if under the right circumstances.
Yes.
That was a dream of mine. We got part of it, but not all of it.
I
have a question.
I have a question. The school trust fund lands for mining is 3.5 million acres. You compare that, you have 11 million and 7 million. The university trust lands are 52,000 acres. What accounts for those huge variations? You have so few acres funding such a high, not only taconite, but non-ferrous. Similar to what 2.5 million.
Yeah, they're in the right place.
At the right time.
Yeah, they just happen to be right in the middle of the Keewatin Taconite mine right now. And they were in the middle of where LTV was mining back in the 90s.
They're
going to be in the middle of right where SR Steel is going to start mining. So whoever
the worst luck ever?
Whoever decided that those were going to be University Trust lands, whether they knew something about minerals at the time or not, they sure.
There's one guy
right
that
spots.
Farmed south of Calumet that actually owned a 40 on the mineral reserve years and years ago.
and he traded it even up for another place that didn't have minerals, and his family was not real happy with them, his next generations. But the other one that was important at the time in the natural wars was the Hill Annex JNL at Calumet, where the Hill Annex Park is. That was just about 100% university land, I think.
School trust, and the complexity of some of those ownerships. You can have a 40 out there that's being actively mined, and when you make the payment of the royalty at the end of the quarter, you can issue 50 checks, because over the generations, this guy owns one half of 10%, and then this group owns one quarter of 20% of 5%. And there are some good organizations that people have passed on, and they have given their interest to charity or to some good organizations that some of these royalty checks get written to. But there's really a history to. You could almost write a history book around half of those lease agreements and the history that's taken place. It can get interesting.
And the mines control themselves, those privately owned ones.
Well, the mines negotiate with those private. Most of the private owners have someone representing them. Like
the Hartleys, the Connors,
the
Bennetts, and the Pillsbury's all have.
They all have trustees that, and then the companies will negotiate agreements with them, and then at the end of the quarter, then the mines or the mining company, the accounting people have to, say, okay, we took this many tons out of the property. The rate is this. This is what we owe them, and then here's the people that get the check, and it might be 50 checks on 140.
And as a CEO, and seeing all that, are those privately owned agreements approximately like the state DNR agreements, or in value, or do they? Is there a wide fluctuation in the agreements that you have with the privates as compared to the state? I mean.
Most of that's kind of confident. The privately written ones are always confidential in nature. I don't think you ever get to see them, do you?
We have in the past
a few of them
signed confidentiality agreements with companies, and the purpose of that is to get to see their private mineral lease agreements so we can figure out what
if you're in the ballpark.
Similar
ore. My question is, how do you know you're in the ballpark
with your
lease agreements? If he's a CEO.
I would say going back in time, and Marty and I were on different sides of the table, but Marty was always nice to get along with.
He bought the coffee?
No, he didn't buy the coffee. He wasn't that nice. But I would say, you go back. When I first got involved in it, probably 20, 25 years back, there was some disparity, quite a bit, because in that time, U.S. Steel, Mintec had nickel a ton royalty rates that dated back to the 1920s, probably. Okay.
That's the same.
And those all ran out, and then they got renegotiated. Now, as those got renegotiated, and a lot of these private people, their terms came up. As the contracts that have been negotiated in the last 20 years, there's probably a lot of equity to. The ones that dated back to the 1920s and 30s, there was probably a lot of differential. I would say in today's world, the DNR has done quite well
in representing the state. We'll look at it a little bit on that. We'll see the nickel a ton royalty, how it had an effect on.
Oh, yeah.
Legislation passed and signed in the 40s, and that directed the state to lease taconite reserves to mining companies. And the idea was that companies needed a land base in order to invest in a taconite plant, which is true. The only shortcoming, if there was one in that, is that there was no escalator put on the royalty rate in the 1940s.
Yeah.
And so it was set at about a nickel a ton. And that was set for a 50-year period.
Wow. But
so there was no inflation in the 40s.
No.
So I don't want to second guess what they did at the time, because inflation was
virtually
non-existent then. compared to what it is today.
Well, and
so companies mined for that 50-year period or a portion of it with the royalty fixed at a nickel a ton.
Right.
And so Hibbing Taconite, for example, mined 220 million tons of school trust ore right in front of their plant, and that generated about $13 million. If that ore was mined with the royalty rates today, it would be closer to $300 million. And so these are long-term agreements. You need to be very, very sure of what you're doing here because they last a long time.
But I will say in defense of what the state did, this was back when natural ore was running out. This was when, you know, you're trying to get industry to invest it in the new taconite process. And that did help stimulate billions of dollars of investment and thousands of jobs. I think, you know, so now would you have been better off to base it on 20 years than 50 years? Of course you would have. But, I mean, there was some rationale, I think,
yes,
for those people way back then. Well, they also set the production tax for a long time. That was set in concrete, too, wasn't it, Lauren?
Yeah, 10 cents a ton.
10 cents a ton for a long, long time. Now, what is it, 220, 230?
Well, I can remember the big debate when Gino said you guys could live with a buck. And it was either the world will fall apart, everybody will leave the state.
So there were a lot of things fixed back then in order to get the industry to invest billions of dollars in facilities and bring on a taconite industry. So I mean, it I don't think you can't look at just what happened and be critical of the people back there representing the state.
You can't be critical of it, but it's a lesson to be learned, and that is want to ask the question. But for this happening, will it happen otherwise? And it may have happened otherwise.
It might have. So and did you have to go 50 years or could have gone 20 years?
Exactly.
You know, I agree.
That's why I have very difficulty with the Job C program because it doesn't always go but for.
No.
It just moves people around.
Mm-hmm. Right. No question about that.
So the next page I have is promote Minnesota iron ore and taconite mining and development. And I have 4 points. Maintain data and drill core information on known taconite deposits and natural iron ore deposits from coal mining of these deposits. Ensure that taconite leases and iron ore leases have royalty escalators and de-escalators that properly affect iron ore and pellet markets. And part of that is also, and I left this off here, I shouldn't have, is ensuring that the taconite mine is accounted correctly. And I said that previously. Then ensure that research is conducted that provides for maintenance of the current industry and provides new opportunities to market Minnesota taconite iron ore, and maintain data on stockpiles and investigate and develop opportunities to sell stockpiles for various uses such as iron recovery, gold material, fill.
How is the DNR being able to track the tailings basin ore that's in, let's say, the Keweenaw or any of them in the future? That those mineral or iron units may have come from all kinds of different ownership. Are you able to at least somehow be able to separate it out? And
what we have are co-mingling agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And what that says is that you track the amount of ore that went through the plant from the various ownerships, and then something like the tailings, the ownership is apportioned by the amount of ore that went through the plant. So the state might own 62.2%, for example, of a particular tailings basin. And then that commingling agreement also talks about if that material is sold, how the proceeds from that sale will be distributed to the mineral owners. So
is that the same thing with the stockpiles as
they
get used as well?
Whenever we can, want a separate stockpile for state-owned material. So
okay, that's
how it's a commingler. And strive very hard to do that.
And did we do that in the past too? Are those stockpiles separate?
Okay. Yes, and what we routinely do if because we're so interested in having separate ownership is that we'll agree to trades of like kinds of material.
Okay.
And so that we wind up with one stockpile nowadays to the extent we can of all state ownership.
Okay. I can vouch for Marty. He has been unduly hard to deal with when you're on the other side of the table on those subject matters.
Okay.
So when you're running a mine,
very
you
insistent.
Only, do you like this is privately owned by them, and this is the state stuff, and so you don't, like, got two shovels working at the same time and running the same materials into the plant?
I mean, sure.
You could be.
So,
yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
Somebody's separating it out as it goes in.
By truck.
By truckload.
Truck count, right. Truck count.
Truck out and weight.
Okay.
The other way is to do this
void estimate.
Talked about, you know, where it's a calculation. You through time survey the pile so you can you know the configuration of what's there, and then you go 6 months later and you figure out what was taken out, and you do a calculation on how much ore was removed between those two periods of time.
Yeah, Mintec might have 5, 6, 7 shovels working at one time.
From different owned properties.
But they have to. They have to blend the ore, too, because, I mean, you might have a very low iron, high silica shovel, and then you might have a high iron, low silica. And what you're trying to do is feed the plant a consistent ore grade. And you have 6 shovels out there, and they're all different ore grades, and you got to blend it coming in. But that's all kept track of.
And that's part of what we do is just ensure that it's proper crediting for the ore that came from the state land. When you have 6 or 7 shovel locations, you have 32 trucks running. It's a 24-hour-a-day operation. The companies are not doing anything. They're not trying to do anything other than report accurately.
Turn the lights off.
Well, I'll say this: the mine engineer and the people out in the mine trying to do this are very diligent. I mean, they take a great pride in their accuracy. You know, and they work very closely with the DNR.
One thing that's really helped.
That's one thing that's
GPS.
Well done.
Sure, I'll bet it has.
Oh yeah,
and hook it into the computer so that when
right.
you take your truck out there, where you got your GPS
right.
in your computer, and you.
But all this, it also that GPS. You know what the miners like. You know what the foreman like best about that GPS. If a guy wants to pull over at midnight and take a nap, he has a hard time doing it.
Yeah.
That truck has to keep moving.
So
that never happened.
That doesn't happen much anymore.
So the next page, I just have a picture of one from one end of the drill core library to the other. And this, we have 2.3 million feet of drill core in that library. We just built a new one.
Didn't they build a new one?
We just mm-hmm. built a new one, and we are purchasing the shelves to put in it yet, so we can. Because we've got quite a bit of drill core out there now that has to be moved in.
Do you have it stored, particularly in the Duluth complex and the Polymet ones? There was a big building up east of Babbitt at one time when
yes.
the old. Is that
yes.
still there?
No, that's all been moved over.
Okay.
Now.
Well, with all the with what Ernie Lehman's done and the not the Maturi one, but the one up by Ely. Duluth Metals and Poly, you must be accumulating pretty good inventory of it.
So the Kennecott stuff's all up there too?
Well, it will eventually be. You know, they keep it until they're done. And, but yeah, it'll eventually end up in one of these buildings.
I need to be leaving at 2:00. So
yeah, we'll
but go ahead.
Okay, the next one is, you know, just some old iron ore information that we had. We did a presentation. We try to promote. We put it. You can see we had this information. We put it in the digital information, and did a presentation. We got a company called Cardero Iron Ore Company that's interested in this particular deposit that's on school trust land, and we've got the analysis there. The next one is actually a graph of school trust. Taconite royalties from 1890 to 2008, and you'll see
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden it started taking off, and that's because a lot of the old nickel a ton royalties were running out, and the new royalties were kicking in with escalators. And so we had to try to maintain proper escalator there. The next one is future school trust taconite, and of course right now Marty alluded to this morning that there's one taconite plant or two taconite plants that are just starting up. All 6 were down. And And so to try to come up with an estimate of how much taconite might be mined in this coming year, it looks like possibly 7.3 million tons of school trust is all that will be mined. Last year it was 24.4 million tons. So,
and that could change up or down.
And it could change. You know, we don't know what the economy is.
Before Lauren leaves, can we break off this?
Sure.
Session?
Yep.
We can just talk
sure.
about a couple other things before Lauren leaves.
Yeah.
If he has to leave it too, then we can come back to this. But it's probably most of it's somewhat self-explanatory too if you take time to read it, right?
Yeah.
I guess. Let's get to what the school trust, what it looks like today, and what it really means to the schools. And if I understand it right, Marty, you told me the number that was in that school trust right now, and it's approaching what, 900 million?
Not that much. No.
650 million.
Yeah. It was up. It goes by the stock market. I think it was close to 800 million.
Was it?
At one time.
Okay.
And it
okay. So part. Like so it is invested in equities and fixed
income. And it's used. It's invested by the state investment board,
yes.
I believe.
Okay.
And there's a that's a well managed.
Right.
Get all the pension funds and everything else. They do a very aggressive job on.
Okay.
Good management of it, as best you can.
So, if we're able to build this fund, of course, there's two ways this fund can grow. One is through the investments. One is trying to get more mining into the school trust lands. If we're able to get it built, Lauren, do you really? Let's put it this way: as a result of this committee's efforts, we're able to get another $100 million into the trust, and the people that invest the money can make $8 million a year off of it. Will the schools really see the $8 million, or are we going to get lost in the politics of it, and they get $8 million out of the school trust and lose $8 million funding?
It was that way until this last legislative, this year coming up now. Not this last legislative session, but the session before, changed the law that is not a subtraction but an addition. A few years ago, probably 10 years ago, we also made an adjustment that we actually increased the school funds, I think, to the tune of about $30 million as we changed the investment policy of the school trust fund. Were you around then, Marty, when we did that?
I don't remember that, actually.
There was a way to get more long-term growth in it, but it was a short-term cost. And so the State General Fund put $30 million into the schools to make up that difference for a two-year period. And now it's an additional.
So it is so you're confident that if we and I know you support schools and all that, but you know there, I'm just talking the legislature in general with the.
Well, it goes in there as long as the governor and DNR doesn't use it all up.
Lauren, am I correct, though, the way I understand that is the legislature still determines how much money comes from the trust fund to the schools. But what the new legislation does is say that it no longer supplants.
Yeah.
They used to determine how much came, but it would supplant. So you're half right. Or what they say with Miriam today, you're almost correct.
I can be almost anymore. I'm happy.
But the way I understand it is that the committee could make another $100 million, of which we make $8 million on investment. But if the legislature doesn't give it to the schools, it doesn't go there.
Well, but we can't give it any other place. I mean,
right.
To be appropriate. Legislature has to appropriate all money.
Okay, so if you don't give it to the schools, then the fund just grows. Yeah.
And I don't know what we've done in other trust funds such as that, including the new one that was the 3As, but in the LCCMR trust fund, we adopted a policy. I think it's a legislative law policy, is it not? Of 5% of more than 5% of the corpus. So if there's growth of 8%, it's only 5.5%. I think it's 5.5.
Yeah, and the school trust is set up differently in that the corpus is called inviolate. The legislature, no one can than the corpus. So the income from minerals or forestry that goes into it, that can't be spent. Only the interest that's generated
right.
can be spent.
And what happens in a year where the fund drops in value? You supposedly have no interest.
Well, you have less. You still have income, but you have less.
Yeah, right, okay.
You probably have less. But so I think LCCMR has experienced probably the same thing on a smaller scale. So it'll be addition, but not necessarily ongoing.
So you do feel if this committee puts time and effort into it and can bring more revenue as a result of our efforts, schools will benefit.
Oh, yeah, and long term is what you want to look
right.
at. I mean, you can't look at what the stock market
No. But schools will benefit from our efforts,
not those
who would like to cut schools to balance the general fund. And I know you're a supporter of schools. I'm not accusing you of that. I know where your position is.
We got our first ongoing increase of $36 this year.
From the school trust fund?
Yes.
Okay.
And now that
okay.
was supposed to continue. It was legislated last year.
Yeah.
We got actually 51, but the 51 was one-time dollars.
Okay.
The 51 went away and took 36 of that replaced from school trust funds this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that should continue. But that's the first increase we've had out of the school trust fund account.
Well, we got to decide where we want to go as a group. And I don't know where I'd like to go is I spend a little time over in Hibbing with Marty's people over there, kind of understanding where the ore is at and what we can do about it. But you know, the two thoughts I have right off the top of my head. One is getting the right lessor to the land.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty mentioned the ore to the west of Mintec, and that's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
There's some very good state ore, the Ontario iron ore property, back in the late 1990s, early 2000s. There was a negotiation where Mintec picked up a portion of that from the Ontario iron ore trust, which is primarily Cleveland Cliffs. And we were able to pick, they released that land, they have it under lease with the state, they released it to Mintec, and for that we gave some stuff, and that got that land into production. Now I think the agreement was they'd only mine 10% of their total ore from that property because it was high grade compared to what Mintec had. But you know, if we could get the rest of that land, and I have been working on this since 1995 when I was still working with it. You know, if you could get a realignment of those ore bodies between Keetac now and HipTac and Mintec, mm-hmm. I think it would throw more state ore in because they're just not lined up right. And I think there's a chance to do that now because, you know, U.S. Steel owns a portion of HipTac when they bought Iron Ore Company of Canada. And I know the mine engineers are looking at it because I've talked to them about it. It's kind of on the back burner, but they're kind of dribbling in it. But if we could get some realignment of those properties, I think it would get people into more state ore. Plus the fact, the other thing I've talked a little bit to them about, Marty, is that you know that Butler Reserve that is on the other side of, what is it, Highway 25, is it? Or what's the highway that goes up between 60, the Butler?
65.
Mm-hmm. You know, the iron ore that's on the eastern side of 65, that's all state ore, isn't it?
That's all the rural pit area?
It's a fair amount of state ore, and actually in March, those leases were issued to U.S. Steel.
They were. Okay. So U.S. Steel did pick them up.
Yes.
Well, see, now...
160.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. Because, you know, Keetac would be the most likely one to mine it, right?
Correct. That was
our... So now if you could get Keetac to release some ores closer to HipTac, and for that, they would release the Ontario, you know, that would all be good, I think.
Well, would it help if this organization recommended to the full permanent school trust fund committee that we encourage mining companies to cooperate to maximize?
Oh yeah, and I think there's some things we can do. Let's put it this way, I don't want to solve the problem, but I think there's some things we can do to try to influence these types of things happening. You know, and on the non-fair side, you got the same thing. You know, the state has a big chunk of the Babbitt Reserve, isn't it?
60%. You call,
huh?
60%.
Yeah, 60% of the Babbitt Reserve. You know, and if that were, you know, and maybe Tech and Techmeco's looking at it, and I understand they're taking a very serious look at it this year and decide where they want to go. So we'll see. But, you know, if we could get that into some sort of active role, and, you know, and I'm not promoting PolyMed here. If we could just get it into the active roles.
Again, it's a dumb question. What is the alignment of these to companies? How does that help you? How would that help?
Well, if you get the Ontario ore is where the MinTac pit ends, the Ontario ore starts. And HIPTAC or Cleveland Cliffs controls it, and their HIPTAC plant is probably 15 miles away.
So they're
away.
Not going to mine it because it's
well,
too far.
Well, for them to mine it would be very expensive. Where MinTac, if they could get to it, they'd start mining it tomorrow. they'd start moving in there.
I see. So if you could get in the simplest form, you have to do some sort of exchange.
We got to encourage them to move forward with this type of thinking.
Well, you know, and I just tell you from my perspective, these companies have fully valid leases. They're current. They're making mm-hmm. their rental payments. They're doing everything that they're obligated to do. And so, you know, if there's some agreement between the companies to look mm-hmm. at a trade of leases.
Right. No.
Joe, you've got a lease, but we're going to take it away from you.
You can't do that.
All your payments.
Mm-hmm. No, all we can do is to try to put in, encourage it, maybe even put some incentives out there to encourage it. I don't know. You know, I mean, let's put it this way. I think it's a subject matter that needs to be discussed here. Is there an answer to it? I don't know. But, you know, we know if this were to happen, or I think if this were to happen, there would be more state or mine. But we got to satisfy ourselves to that first. But I think that's the scenario that would play out. Well, okay, once we satisfy ourselves with that, then, okay, let's this committee at the next meeting or in the next one think about, okay, how can we talk to the state or to these companies and try to encourage them to do it? Is there any way we could simply encourage them to do it? And if that doesn't fail, is there any way we could give them an incentive to do it? You know, I mean, how do we bring it about?
I did have a map in here. It's probably the third from the back page.
Because, you know, short of doing stuff like that, I don't know what we're going to do to bring more mineral revenue in.
You can see the ownership and good lease.
You can see where the MinTac pit ends there. HIPTAC is quite a bit west there, and it's just to the very west of the MinTac pit.
Yeah, this is Hibbing Taconite here, and mm-hmm. MinTac's here, and then Ontario is just right there.
Yeah.
It just follows right here.
And the history is Bethlehem Steel was going to build a taconite plant there,
mm-hmm.
so
oh,
they
yeah.
put together a big ore reserve,
yeah.
and they never built the plant.
Yeah, these leases got put together for good reason, mm-hmm. but history has changed that.
Yeah.
I'm not being critical of anybody for structuring the leases the way they were because there was reason for it. But about 10 years ago, this was part of the Ontario here,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to get an exchange for that. And in fact, the day after we got the go-on, in fact, I called Frank Hippa up, and he had trucks in there within the hour.
I have no choice but to leave. Good to see you.
You indulge just 5 minutes extra.
All right. All right.
Thank
talk
you.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So do we want to keep going here?
Well, we can probably. I don't know. What do you want to do?
Well, we could. I mean, I just soon read through it.
Yeah, you can read through it.
I just soon read through it. I'll digest it better if I read it.
That came up. You know, I talk about the research we do, but there was one thing that came up. I put this handout in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this handout talks about three different copper nickel deposits.
Okay.
Where we estimated that the royalty to the school trust could be over a 25 to 30 year period if they started mining, about $1.4 billion.
Yeah, it's significant. Now, which of that is state land? Do you know?
I think we identified the three deposits. So they were the Babbitt deposit, the one that you talked about, the Tecumseh.
Right.
There's Duluth Metals. Where they're drilling, it's got a lot of state land, and then Franconia Minerals, the Birch Lake deposit, state land.
Right. Okay. Those are the three big state ones.
Those are the three big school trust ones.
Okay. Okay.
And then,
Okay. But I think that
peat is a very small amount. You know, there is a peat table in here too.
You have leases in place. I mean, there's not a whole lot this committee can do to change the revenue rate, nor who's going to mine it or when they're going to mine it. I mean, that's all. I mean, it's in place. I mean, so but if we can influence people to swap out some of this land or free it up for people who will mine it. Now, that could impact school trust funding.
Well, the other part about it I would be interested in, John and Marty, is you guys deal with this stuff every day. And are there some roadblocks out there to maximizing school trust funds, like Jim was talking about, like the fact that, well, here we got these reserves that they're so far from the mine, they're just not going to get to them. Right. There's other things like that, too, that you guys are aware of. You have to let us know, because if we can use political pressure or whatever else to maximize changes to maximize revenue, that's what we want to know. Yeah. So I think an important part of what we're going to do here, Jim, is maybe get some feedback from you guys. Sure, you're facilitating this, but while you're facilitating, you're saying, why we're doing our job here, we're also noticing if we just do this, or if somebody would get this done, we could really get a ton of money for the committee.
Yeah. And what happened in the past with those Ontario leases is that the state, right now we have a policy that we aren't going to give a mineral lease to any taconite company unless we look at it and say, okay, you're going to be the one to mine.
Okay, so you've changed some internal policies.
Right, so we don't do that anymore. Ontario wouldn't have gotten that lease.
Mm-hmm.
MinTac would have gotten the lease. Mm-hmm. We've been doing, writing the leases.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's nothing that anybody has done wrong. It was done at the time based on the best thinking of the time.
Well,
like things change.
Bethlehem was going to build.
Now when we do non-ferrous leases, we look and see, okay,
right,
we're not going to give you a lease on this non-ferrous 40 unless you can show to us leases that you have on adjacent 40s, because then that proves to us that they could mine it.
Mm-hmm.
But see, even that has changed, because at the time the Tecumseh lease was given out, Tecumseh was going after some very large federal funding, which I don't think they ever got, did they? I don't think so. They were asking, I think it was $450 million, some god-awful number. And they were hoping to acquire the LTV plant. They did not acquire the LTV plant, and PolyMet wound up with it. And even, under today's thinking, you probably would have, that Babbitt Reserve probably, if it had not been leased, you'd probably be looking very strongly at PolyMet. Not because Tecumseh isn't capable, and not because Tecumseh won't do it. They very well might, and I hope they do. I hope they do. They move ahead with the reserve. But, you know, I mean, but all I'm trying to say, you know, the players change, the circumstances change, mm-hmm. and you get downstream, and, you know, you can't live life in reverse. You, mm-hmm. you can only. And Tecumseh did some very good things. You know, they agreed to spend X amount of dollars a year on developing the land, you know, and doing exploratory drilling, and they've done a lot of work on the land. Mm-hmm. And that's all positive. That's all good. So, you know, all we can do is to try to sort through some of these things and where if you could shuffle it around, you know, then we got to talk about or think about, okay, how can we help that happen without alienating people? and that's critical.
The one thing that maybe, you know, you should know that I hadn't talked about, you know, we go through all this administration, we do research, but the last page on this is called the Mineral Management Account.
Okay.
And it's I printed out the two laws that apply to this. And what the mineral management account is, this first one says, point B on page one of this law says 20% of all payments under sections 93.14 to 93.28 shall be credited to the minerals management account in the natural resources funds as a cost for administration and management of state mineral resources by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. So essentially what happens is when royalties come in, 20% mm-hmm. goes to the mineral management account.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an account in the DNR. So out of 20 million of school trust, 4 million went into that account. Out of 33 mm-hmm. million of university mm-hmm. or 9 million in university trust, 20% of that went in, 1.8 million. And so the same with tax forfeit. And then the second point in this law is that on the next page, it says that the minerals management account is created as an account in the Natural Resources Fund. You can read that. But part B says, in the balance in the minerals management account, if the balance in the minerals management account exceeds $3 million on June 30th, the amount exceeding $3 million must be distributed to the permanent school fund. So essentially what ends up happening is that the DNR is using that $3 million mm-hmm. annually as a means of administering these mm-hmm. minerals that we have.
Do you normally consume all that money? Does any of it get reverted back?
Oh, anything above the $3 million, it gets...
So their money does go back?
Yeah, money goes back. We keep 20%, and then, you know...
Yeah, actually, it's about 8% that we spend.
Yeah.
So the other 22.
You start with 20%.
The other 12% finds its way back into the school trust.
Yes, it does.
You're a good custodian.
Attaboy.
The legislature tells us how much we can spend every year.
But the superintendents want to know why I can't do it for 4%.
Yeah. Well, we're working on that.
But I thought that should be at least the point that.
I understand, Marty, but the superintendents don't.
Yeah, what you're showing is you got a cap. You have a cap on what you can spend.
Right. Yeah,
right. It's actually $2.896 million this upcoming year that we were appropriated from this account
to spend.
So anything over the $2.896 million will go back to the trust fund.
Okay.
That's on the mineral side of thing, but that's not on the...
That's not on the forestry. This is just for the what I have in that handle.
But Marty, but help me with this. You know, we're if I understand, this subcommittee is set up with the task of understanding mineral leases and trying to find ways to either increase the money coming into the school trust. And there's only two ways to increase it that I'm aware of. One is get people to mine the ores sooner at higher volumes, or get them to pay more money per ton.
Or expand the sources.
Well, expand the sources, like the non. When I say get people, whether it's existing or someone new. And, I mean, you know, and I'm not just saying this to make you feel good, but, I mean, you guys do a very good job in managing these lands. You have done a good job. And you've got stuff, about anything that's attractive out there is under lease, you know, for prevailing royalty rates. The only area that there that could use some improvement, and not because of what you did, but just because things change over time, is to get these lands realigned, you know. And that was no fault of anybody, because back when it was done, it was the right reason. Things changed. And beyond that, the only other thing, you know, you either get it realigned, or you could outright sell land. You could outright sell some mineral holding. You know, if someone, you know, but then, let's say you got a mineral holding that, let's say, is worth, I don't know, $50 million. And, you know, you think that someone's going to mine that over, say, 25 years to keep the math. So you're projecting you're going to have a cash flow of $50 million over 25 years. Well, so the only way you would attract anybody into paying for that up front is to discount it at some rate. Because if you discounted your cash flow of your $2 million a year income over 25 years, I mean, that's going to discount back to something probably less than, you know, 25 million, probably be more like 15 to 20 million. I mean, but does the state or does the DNR or does school trust, do any of them want to think in those kinds of terms?
Well, it would take some legislation to accomplish that, Jim, because there are state laws that prevent the sale or exchange of mineral rights.
Okay.
And I think the reason was, looking back in history, a lot of that was done turn of the century, 1900s. People were buying the state-owned mineral rights for, you know, for nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And so they put a law in place that said, you know, mineral rights are off limits.
Yeah.
Now, it would take a statutory change. Doesn't mean that can't happen.
Yeah.
But that's what it would take.
Well, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, and I'm not saying you want to do it. I'm just asking the question. I'm trying. If our charge is to bring,
how do we do it?
More money, quicker. Mm-hmm. What are the ways we can accomplish that? And that would be one of the ways. Now, is it a way we want to explore? Is it a way worth thinking about? Is it something that should be considered, or should we say that's just crazy thinking, throw it away? But the only reason I brought it up under John's exhibit as a state and trustee, the duties of the trust manager to lease and sell trust property or as directed. He had sell in there. But you're saying it would require changing.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you flat out, how we look at these things is we ask the question, okay, so how does this benefit the trust fund? And so for me, that's kind of the question that I haven't really thought about something like that, you know, sort of a sale today of mineral reserve and what that would be. And so what I need to think about is, okay, so how would that benefit the school trust fund?
Well, you know, and you can argue both sides of that.
Yep.
I mean, you can argue
long-term.
You can argue, where is the steel industry going to be? Let's argue the Ferris side of it. You know, where is the steel industry going to be 50 years out?
Yeah.
You know, is the domestic steel industry going to exist in the form it exists today? You know.
Yeah.
With what China, you know, I mean, you could argue that with what China's doing and this whole boom in the last 5 years, I don't think many people would argue that was a China phenomenon, period. China, and a lot of people would argue that the Summer Olympics had a lot to do with it. They were building skyscrapers. They were doing work that was just, it was their show, it was their chance to showcase to the world. And soon after that happened, what happened? And now that Chinese have ramped up so much steel production, any expansion they do will be on their terms with their product. and they have contracts in place with Australia that are going to pretty much take care of their plants, I think. So, you know, is the domestic, you know, you could argue, is the domestic steel industry in this country ever going to see anything like the last 5 years? And if not, then if you could bring, if you follow that logic, and if you buy that logic, then you could say, well, if the domestic steel industry is being discounted, if it looks like we could get back to imports, and next time the imports come in, some of them could come from China, therefore it'll even be worse than the last time. What does that do to the value of the ore in northern Minnesota? So, you know, you could paint a scenario that if you can get a discounted rate, you know, and let's say your ore is worth a buck a ton. Well, if you could get that buck a ton 20 years out discounted to today, maybe it's a good deal. Now, the other argument you can put together is, that, you know, what we saw the last 5 years, you know, the industry's cleaned itself up. The industry's going to be world competitive. The industry's going to be here long term. And as it's here longer and longer, iron is going to be harder and harder to come by. You know, the shortages will develop. I mean, you know, you can argue it either way. You know, and I guess it just depends what philosophy you want, you know. But, and I think it has to be very carefully thought out. But, you know, if you could take, like I said, you know, if you could take that cash flow stream of, say, make it simple, $2 million a year for 25 years, that's $50 million. If you could discount that back at 5, 6, 4%, whatever it is, and you wind up with $15, $20 million, would you want to, and you could get a company that say, okay, we'll give you $15 million and we own the reserve, it's ours. You know, now, what, you know, in 25 years from now, if Marty Vadas's name is on there, people are going to look back and say that guy was a genius if the market comes unraveled. If the market goes the other way, that guy...
They don't call him Nikola Tun Marty.
That guy's a real idiot.
What? Can I switch gears a second?
Sure.
What is the opportunities, or how do you market, or do you market? You take a fixed, what I would consider a fixed asset, the taconite, for example, and all those leases, and everything's pretty well taken out. But what about is the stockpiles and what about peat? Do you do any sort of aggressive marketing that more people might get into that and garners more dollars?
You're in the wrong committee for peat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well.
He just
John showed it in here, and it made me think about it.
Yeah. Somewhat a marginal business. Yeah, and you know, history shows that you can make some money at leasing peat, but not a lot. And so it's a matter of, you know, where do you want to put your effort to try to generate income. The way that we have gone more is towards the stockpile material. We have done inventories of what stockpiles are on the range, and actually have that stuff available digitally. We're going to put up on our website where school trust fund aggregates are, so that everybody in the world can see where the aggregates are, and we hope that that'll lead to more bidding through road contracts and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We've been really quite aggressive with the non-ferrous, trying to do stuff like, we just finished a gold grain survey. Believe it or not, south of Side Lake, between Side Lake and Hibbing, there's an area that's showing very, very high gold grain counts in the glacial tills, and we're going to put that in our next mineral lease sale. Gold is one metal that's still sky high in price, and so we're seeing a lot of interest in gold. South of Side Lake and north of Hibbing.
Okay, is there any drilling there?
No drilling. It's greenstone, so it's the right kind of rock, but nobody's ever done any work there ever.
So when are you going to be putting that up, please?
And the lease sale of it later this year. Hmm. And so, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we do, trying to encourage the, maybe what I would call the higher potential return type of things, you know, for years and years, we worked on the Duluth complex, gathering information and, you know, keeping this drill core and that kind of stuff. I mean, there's some real potential return to the trust fund from those kinds of mineral activities. And you do make some money off of leasing aggregates and leasing peat and industrial minerals, but if you look at the income versus the effort, I mean, you better
output. We know that Highway 169 is going to be four lane between Taconite and
someday
and Hibbing or Pingilly someday, and there are school trust stockpiles sitting on the Hill Annex property that can be used for that, and so we'd actually put a road back in there so that when that happens, the contractors can get to that, and you know, you end up maybe selling a million yards for, you end up with a dollar a yard. That's $1 million for the trust.
Well, thank you, John, for this. I appreciate it.
Well,
and Marty,
one idea I got to throw out because it's one I've been kicking around in my brain here, and I don't know exactly what to do with it. But I look at the copper nickel area, and we have individual deposits there and individual companies, and things are kind of starting to take shape there and come together. In my mind, it's maybe like some of the iron ore Taconite was, you know, 50 or 100 years ago, where they needed to get into the land to do some drilling, but that's really all they needed. The companies are going to start to need places for infrastructure, mills and tailings ponds and transportation corridors. PolyMet actually has kind of an ideal situation where there's on top of an existing infrastructure, but that won't work for the others. So somewhere, somehow along the line here, there has to be kind of a rationalization of this company is going to need this much for a tailings basin, and they're going to need to transport, you know, this area. There has to be some eventual way to get people what they need in order to develop those deposits, because it's not there now. It's a patchwork of ownerships. Some cases, one mineral owner has mineral rights leased where the other one needs to put their right away and that kind of thing. So I don't know how all that works out, but I know that there's a need there. And like I say, PolyMet's kind of got an ideal situation. But
So what are you thinking?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how you accomplish that. But you got really four or maybe even five distinctive companies. I mean, there's one that's not as far along. And they're all going to need plant sites.
Well, and I don't have my PolyMet hat on here, okay? I'm not representing PolyMet, but, you know, there's two different ways to go about that, and that I mean, you know, when PolyMet gets our permit, which I think we will now, and you know, we'll only be running a third of that plant. And you know, so you can triple it in size and as far as the concentrate side of it. I think when we get up and running, you're going to find some other interesting developments on process that maybe will, you know, could streamline things too, you know, and be good all the way around, you know, but you know, you could have three or four different plants located all around the range, or you could wind up with one central processing plant too, because you know the material that you're dealing with is a much more valuable product, you know, so you can afford to transport a little bit, you know, and I think, you know, the state needs to think in terms of, you know, in the whole permitting process and the whole permitting arrangement, what works best, you know, more of a central processing scenario, or one where maybe you have three or four plants like the Taconite scattered hilter-kilter, you know. Now, to have a central, that means companies are going to have to work out agreements and arrangements and get along. And I don't know whether that's possible. And I don't have my PolyMet hat on now. I do think that you know, those are some of the questions that have to be dealt with, and
can't get the Koreans to talk to the
Chinese.
Well,
I think. I mean, from what I hear and understand, is to get a plant permitted where you have boundary water flow is going to be very difficult. You know, and so that means if that's the case, then you're going to have to move some of the ore to the south side of the Laurentian Divide. So you're going to have to transport it some distance anyway. Maybe what I hear on the street, and this is on the street, this is not anything I hear at PolyMed, but I was talking to a fellow over in Hibbing that I deal with on some other issues, and that's fairly knowledgeable in it, and you know, he was saying that he just is of the opinion, and the people he talks to, it's going to be very difficult to permit with. And when you go up to Ely and you talk to the, you know, and I know people that have talked to Steve Paragas up there, yeah, and people like that, you know, and Steve is very active in that whole movement. Yeah. Their real concern is not what they say is, their real concern is not PolyMet. Their concern is what follows PolyMet if it drains, if it flows to the boundary waters. So, you know, I mean, that's what people are saying. So, you know, those plants are going to have to, you know, some of that ore is going to have to be moved south if unless you can get a boundary water drainage permit. And when it comes to the boundary waters, I tell you, when it comes to environmental permitting, I wouldn't bet my money on anyone, would you?
Well,
that's a tough one.
You make a good point, but if that's the case, if that's how it plays out, then you still need the transportation corridor.
Well, you need the transportation.
It don't exist now.
You got to have the transportation corridor, but then at that point, if you're underground and you put an overland conveyor in, you know, it would be pretty clean.
I would.
And you need tailings basins if you're going to process it there. So
well, you'd process it wherever you send it to. You'd take it out of the ground and overland convey it. I mean, I just think there's a lot of things that need to be thought about. I mean, how this all plays out to satisfy all the concerns of people, you know, that are involved.
Well, I think you end up getting some sort of big agreements together with counties, with the state. I mean, if you got to do stuff like that, even whether, you know, if you're going to make it attractive for these companies to come in and start moving with the whole copper nickel stuff, whether it's Crosby Ironton area or wherever the heck it is, because you're right, that stuff's not there. None of that's there now, and you're going to have to work with the counties to whether they, like they've done with Esser, where they've traded land and building infrastructure, railroads and access and brought pipelines, and they're going to have to do the same thing there and work out deals. But you get, what sort of part does this committee take in that whole brokering process?
Well, there's no simple answer to it. But I mean, I think we got to kick all this stuff around and come to grips with where we, you know, where do we want to get involved? Where don't we want to get involved? For instance, you know, the sale of minerals. Do we want think in those terms? Do we want to pursue that, or do we want to say that they're just, forget it? It ain't going to happen. But I mean, our charge is to bring in revenue. These are ways to bring in revenue sooner and more of it sooner. So, I mean, either it's going to be a consideration of this committee or it's not going to be a consideration.
Well, it depends, yeah. How active do you want to be? It's been maybe sort of a...
Well, some of the stuff might totally be off the table. Then we shouldn't deal with it. But, you know, the other one, too, that I've been thinking a little bit, Marty, is, you know, and I don't know as we can do much about it, but, you know, the other thing is if you can develop new markets. Well, what is a new market for taconite? I mean, it's kind of limited. But one of the things I was going to talk to Mike Lalich up at the NRRI, you know, they've been working on some thoughts, I think, haven't they, John?
Yep.
They've been working on, what was I heard the other day, taconite and cement, or?
Well, they use it as aggregate. They've been doing a lot of work with aggregate.
What? Well, there was a, some folks, and I was going to learn more about it. The SEH people up on the range were telling me, and I think one of them works for SEH, but as a husband and wife, and I think they're both engineers, they built a house up there, and they drilled, I don't know, three or four big drill holes under their house, and they filled them up with taconite pellets, and they also have solar on the roof, and they said they are heating, cooling, doing the whole thing with a zero utility bill. And I guess in the summertime, they suck down those drill holes and out, you know, the air moves with the pellets.
Yeah.
And they draw the coolness off, and the pellets warm up. And then in the summer, in the wintertime, they draw the heat off of them and send them through a heat pump and heat the house. Well, you know, there's some really innovative stuff out there.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I was going to call Mike and ask him if the NRI wanted to pursue that, because it's a heck of a, I mean, you think about it. Well, there's a lot of people around the country, not a lot, but there's some that are drawing, that have drill holes down, and they're drawing heat up through a heat pump. And I know there's a farmer down outside of Winona that has a big old antique museum place, and it's a pretty good-sized building. And he has no furnace, he has no air conditioning, and it's always cool in there. In the summertime, it's probably 65, in the wintertime, it's 65, you know, and he just, you know, in the summer, he can draw coolness out of there. In the summertime, or in the wintertime, he draws the 60-some degree temperature and runs it through a heat pump of some sort. I mean, it can be done, and the pellets just add more to it, I suppose, because you can move air through them, and then they hold heat or they hold cool. So, I mean, but that's another thing our committee, you know, if you could. But how else do we raise revenue?
The one thing that you said, though, earlier about new products, and then you were talking about where will the industry be in 30 years. And, you know, if you kind of look back at the integrated industry where all the pellets are used and all the taconite, they made probably in the 60s, they were making 70% of the steel. And now they're making about 35% of the steel in the U.S. because of the electric furnace industry. And the electric furnace industry can't use taconite pellets.
No.
So even though 100 million tons of steel is still being made.
But how do you track more people up there?
So you've got to come up with a new product like
like Steel Dynamics is doing.
What Iron Nugget.
Iron Nugget. What's Steel Dynamics? But, you know, if you contact Nucor Steel, could you get Nucor Steel interested in coming to northern Minnesota? They're looking for, they're looking for a source of iron. Now, I doubt if they're looking very far. They were looking real hard back when scrap was $250 a ton. They're probably not looking quite as hard today.
Not as hard now. Price of scrap.
Well, anyway. We got to think about some of that, Marty. We got to think about what does the state have a tolerance for, you know, and the state being the DNR, the school trust, and all that. I mean, you know, we've kind of isolated what we can do if our charge is to try to get additional revenue into the school trust fund. You know, the ways, I mean, you create a bigger and better market for the product we have. You realign, you try to influence the realignment of lease agreements to get them into earlier production. Or you are willing to go out and outright sell the mineral holdings. Those are the only three ways I can think of accomplishing any of that. And so do we have any other ideas on how we can do it? And then once we know all the ways we can go about it, then which ones are on the table, which ones are off the table?
And the thing that we've pursued most aggressively is the idea of generating new mineral industries or expanded mineral industries. And the examples are the copper, nickel, or the iron. Right.
So
we've chased those kinds of things pretty hard.
And you've chased what you were saying, the manganese or?
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, there's one right now, manganese. They're doing a study right now on the Cuyuna Range.
And because, you know, policy for mineral development, as I look at that statute, you know, research development, and what other kind of minerals are there? And you guys you've probably done that. You've chased it all down probably from
titanium. There's another one. There actually is a new company in on that going to start drilling on the titanium deposits in the Blue Complex. They've been known for many years, kind of like the copper nickel has. And it's a company that was formerly an iron ore company. And they're pursuing the development of those titanium deposits. And the gold and, you know, there are similar kinds of mafic intrusions like the Duluth Complex across the state. And so we've done some work with the MGS on identifying those, and there are about 30 of them. They're much smaller. And so the Kennecott exploration in Aiken and Carlton County is really on one of those small mafic intrusions. And they're getting really quite good results from the work that they're doing down there. But there are more of those. And so we're promoting the leasing and exploration of those other kinds of deposits.
Mm-hmm. That very last map kind of shows that.
Those intrusions?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it shows some of them, but there's...
And like I say, the other one that seems to be of interest nowadays, and it changes with time, is gold. And so we have done this kind of high-level evaluation work looking at gold grains and the till and that sort of thing, and I've taken that kind of information to a place called the PDAC in Toronto. They have an annual mineral exploration conference there. Have a booth display and have been successful in attracting some of the Canadian-based companies to come into Minnesota and explore those. There are actually four of those companies in the Ely area and one more in Itasca County right now that are exploring, and we hope to get some interest beyond that as well.
So, anyway, we're going to schedule another meeting, but I think we're down to to achieve our objective. We've got, you know, we can develop new markets, we can bring new producers in, we can restructure leases to try to get them in the hands of people that'll mine sooner, or we can sell mineral rights.
My suggestion might be to take that back to the broader committee for maybe a more full discussion.
Right. And we've got to decide. Okay, out of those four, you know, what is it that we would be willing to move forward with, and what of it we would not? And I think the most controversial one would be to sell mineral rights. That would,
I agree.
You know, the other three, I don't think anybody would have much heartburn with.
Is there anything else in statute currently that seems to handcuff you guys from maximizing thing? Maybe it was or is there a law that you wish you had? For example, if let me just throw something out. Let's use the nickel example, nickel a ton example. If you had, there was something in statute that said if the royalties paid. We're not within 300% of market within a 3-year average. No matter how long the term of the lease was, it's renegotiated. Something like that. If you had statute like that that could maximize, you want it to be significant enough that it would not scare companies from some sort of upfront capital investment. But yet doesn't handcuff you. I think a 25-year lease is still a handcuff myself.
It depends on the escalators that are put on it.
Well, that's true. But you know for sure, I'm guessing, you haven't told me this, but I'll guess that there's some still long-term ones out there without.
They're all gone now?
Okay.
There's. I don't, I would
Or that's just an example. Is there something else? Maybe let's throw that out.
I don't know. I don't know all the leases that are out there, but I would say all the leases I'm aware of, they're good leases. The only thing you can question is, would you be better off if the lease was with XYZ company instead of this one? But that's hindsight, because at the time the lease was put together, it was put together with the right company. Things changed.
I tell you, there is one thing that comes to mind when you ask that question, and I don't know what form this would take, but something that we have seen over the years is on the Mesabi Range and other areas, actually, the ability to keep that future reserve unencumbered with surface development has always been a challenge.
Well, that's what the Laurentian Vision is all about.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
helped, hasn't it?
It has helped, because it's provided information so people can kind of understand.
So communities understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a good step in that direction, but some people in the past have suggested some sort of zoning authority over the range so that we don't encumber it.
Right.
But I don't know that would ever fly, because
that would
limit what you might do with property that
mm-hmm.
you own.
But mm-hmm. there's still whole towns up there that could very easily be moved and free up a lot of mineral wealth.
McKinney.
Well, I've in a discreet way mentioned that to the council a couple times. Maybe we should just, these houses are all getting in an ill state. Maybe we should just slowly relocate Boabic over towards Giants Ridge, get everybody closer to the resort.
And mine where it is?
McKinley.
And then mine Boabic.
Well, do it at night late. Just
I don't think that would be a total impossible thing to accomplish, as long as you had 100% certainty that the company would mine it once you moved in that direction. You might be surprised, if you could financially put it all together. I don't know.
Absolutely.
But communities, you start moving in that direction, you start doing that, and people who are willing to relocate, you buy their house, or you get them set up closer, and you have a core village that you create, so you start with the town. But the company would have to get behind it and make some commitments, and I don't think that would happen. Well, at any rate, when should we have another meeting?
Well,
when and where?
Do we know when we're meeting with the next?
I wonder. Geez, I wish I had everybody's email address. I wonder if I do. We didn't have email addresses on here, did we?
They've got them for us, because they get sent to us. Yeah, on our invite we do. Here.
Oh, on the invite. Yeah, I'll pick them up off there.
Yeah.
I'll get something out.
If I got mine here, you can just take it.
Do you have a member on this committee? Are you a member?
No, none of us are members.
Who?
None of us are members.
Well, who do you want to be your member? I want a DNR spokesman on our committee. How can we function without you guys?
Well, we'll be here. We're here for you.
We're here for you.
We don't get to vote.
Well, okay, I won't let you vote, but
famous last words.
But I can count on one of you showing up.
John is our lead from DNR.
Okay, I can count on one of you showing up.
Absolutely.
You don't want me plotting without your presence.
We want to work together.
You know that could be a danger, Marty. Not because I do it intentionally, but my stupidity. But I'll tell you, I will get an email out and kind of recap what this meeting was all about.
I think Dan's been taking notes too. Maybe he could give you a draft and you could.
You want to do that, Dan?
Yeah, that's what I've done in the past. If that
terrific. I like them. Do you have my email address yet?
Yep.
Will you email me it, and then I'll review it and.
Yeah, put some minutes
together. I think what we should do, Jim, let me just throw this out, is based on this discussion in a little bit, maybe we report back to the big committee.
We'll have to.
And ask a little direction.
Well.
Or do you have some ideas? That
well, no, I think we can. I'll go over to Hibbing maybe one of these days and sit down with your people and get some maps and get a little bit better informed, if that's okay, Marty.
Absolutely.
who do you want me to call over there? John? Okay. And then, I don't know when the big committee, they're talking about September.
September, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And we're not going to get much done in the summer. So maybe we'll send the minutes out, and I'll gather up a bunch of information and get well prepared for the next meeting with maps and thoughts, and then we'll go to the big meeting and then have the subgroup or subcommittee after that.
That's what I was thinking.
You want to enjoy your summer?
Yeah, kind of. Go and play some baseball with the boys.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Well, anybody got anything else? No?
Thank you.
No.
Thank you.
You guys outnumbered us.
Yeah,
that's great. Thanks, John. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. I'm sorry to kind of talk around you.
That's fine.
Thanks, you appreciate it. John, nice to see you. North. Thanks. Yeah. Jim, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yep, you bet.
But you know, this all sounds.
And thank you.
You know, it all sounds exciting.
You guys. You never copied your presentation. I left it in my chair. And I think somebody grabbed it on my way out.
We didn't suggest a subcommittee, but it was actually Lauren that really wanted to have them. And so maybe he has some reasons.
Beyond about 30 people up there.
I mean, you've got
to the cuts.
Well, I don't want to see that.
Yeah,
I mean, if there's some things we should
mainly recommend,
we're not
they look after
shifters.
Sure